Julie, it's really good of you to talk to us here on Drive Time on City Talk 105.9. First thing I want to ask you is, what do you think about Beatles Day and why hasn't it happened before? It's 2008 now.
Yes, but Liverpool was reticent about supporting any sort of Beatle event for a long, long time. It's only Bill and Dave at the Cavern that started. Well, Dave was a taxi driver and people were asking him, can you show me this and can you show me this? And some people were showing them the wrong any old thing, just, you know, without the knowledge of what really happened and when. And Bill and Dave got together and, as you know, started up Cavern City Tours. And Liverpool wasn't keen. The council and the powers that be weren't keen then. And there was a famous What Have the Beatles Ever Done for Liverpool charade.
Just the most unbelievable, inappropriate thing to say. How did you feel about that?
Well, I just thought it was idiotic, like anybody who sits and thinks for a minute. And a lot of what we see in Liverpool today, the tourists, the money that's coming in with tourism, the entertainment factors, the Cavern Club, it's on the back of the Beatles. So we've got a Beatle week at the end of August. It started off as a day. Mm-hmm. It's ended up a full-blown week of wild fun. I mean, it is just absolutely fantastic. You've got crowds in this city. You don't need police for it. You don't need policing. Everyone's here to have a good time. Everyone's here.
What are you looking forward to doing and being a part of most this week? There must be one particular thing.
This week? I was just talking to Chris that works here, and he was telling me about the Beat Goes On at the World Museum. Yeah. I'll probably go and look at that. This morning, we've had a group of school children from St. Gabriel's School. Hello, children. Down at the Cavern, singing.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and they sang In My Liverpool Home and some Beatles songs. And then I came to talk to, we had a bit of a dance outside the Cavern. Kyle is my new dancing partner. I think he's about 10 and devastatingly good looking.
Fantastic.
And then Jay of the Mersey Beatles came to sing to them. So they had a great day. And then they went on to sing somewhere else. And so I came in to be with the children, and the days progressed from there. But when you were saying, why hasn't this happened before? I was making the point that it has, only in the whole Beatle week. So it was a bit surprising to me when I heard about Beatle Day, because Beatle week is full on Beatles, isn't it? You must have
Absolutely.
Been, yeah. But, of course, the big difference is this is raising money for charity, and that is absolutely fantastic. Liverpool is doing well. It's prospering at the moment, right in front of our eyes. It is the phoenix rising from the ashes, and how lovely to share it on with the children in Alderhay. I think little Rhys did his parents set up a trust, and money's going there, which is so noble of them. That's absolutely fantastic. And there isn't anyone in the country that doesn't know about him. And it's just going to promote great entertainment and fun in the city, but for a really, really good purpose.
Absolutely.
And I think this is the first of many. And I can guarantee next year there's going to be more music in the streets, the act, because they'll get it, their act together, if you like. Absolutely. And the band that you were just saying was out in Williamson Square, the Beatlemaniacs, yeah. They are excellent, and I've already said today, give them a job.
Oh, really? Yeah. I like the music. The wigs are a little bit iffy, but I love the music.
The harmony was brilliant.
The harmony was excellent. Yeah. Tell me, Julia, people refer to you as John Lennon's little sister. How proud are you when you sit down in silence on your own and think about it? How proud of you of that legacy, and can you believe it actually happened? Just an amazing adventure.
I'm enormously proud. I mean, John was a genius for a start, before he was a Beatle.
What was he like as a kid, wasn't it? Before he came a Beatle?
Yeah. He was a bossy brother.
Was he? Really?
Yes. Loving, but bossy. He babysat my sister and I a lot, took us out, took us to the pictures, the park, but we had to do what he said.
Did you?
Yes. No, not always. No, did we have to do what he said? Well, he tried. He'd put us in the pictures, he put me in the pictures, and went outside to smoke. And I knew not to move until he came back, which could have been a whole picture by then, you know, when you got the big picture and the little picture, and the ads and the news, Pathy News. I didn't know how long I was going to have to wait till he came back.
He was very much his own man, wasn't he? Very much his own boy, was he?
I think he was. I mean, the circumstances of his childhood made him defensive and with other people. And I've talked to so many people that were good friends or around John at that time and while he was growing up. And he certainly developed a shell that other people would have seen, but we were behind the shell, which is really nice because we were living with his mother, who is our mother.
He was very much more than a musician. Now, this is through my eyes as a 40-something guy. To me, he was a philosopher. He was a poet as well. His use of words were amazing. That's what I delight in most of all. When did he first show those skills to you? When did you first notice them?
Well, all this, all his talent came from my mother. My cousin says that, my cousin Lilo says that the talent that John had wasn't anything compared to the talent that my mother had.
Oh, my word.
Yeah. And my mother was an artist, a musician, played the piano accordion.
Piano accordion.
She was really unusual, believe me. Loved Edith Piaf, Judy Garland. And she played the banjo. And she taught John the banjo. John and I could both read before we went to school, and we wrote books. And my mother used to use a black calligraphy pen on white paper. And you look at John's drawings. He's drawing with mummy. There's no doubt about that. And we made books and sewed them together with big, bright knitting wool.
And a lot of people you speak to who are friends or are related to famous people, past and present, nearly every interview I've heard the question, when did you first realise they had greatness within them? I think it's a massively unfair question to ask because it's very subjective in a way. So let me put it to you in a different way. When did you first realise, and I would have thought whatever area John went into, he was going to succeed in any case.
Because
to me, and you could tell me now, shoot me down, he had this bloody mindedness, this sort of blinkered, I was going to get there, whatever.
And he was a genius,
a natural genius, which of course is a big advantage, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, but you're right about his drive, because there are geniuses who don't get out of bed, aren't there?
Well, I've always said that someone who is gifted and does never fulfil their potential, it's the biggest sin in life.
Yeah. And yet there are many people like that.
Of course so.
There are. But John said at 12, 11 or 12, it's famous, this quote, I don't know if there is such a thing as a genius, but if there is, then I am one.
Is there such a thing?
Oh, yes. How can you say Einstein isn't a genius?
And you can't manufacture a genius, can you?
No, it's innate. You're born with it.
Tell me about the musical side. Very few people I meet say I hate the Beatles or I don't like the Beatles. It's either, yeah, I like the Beatles, or they're the greatest thing that happened to music and culture in this country, in the world, possibly. When was the first time you saw the guys playing a band together and you thought, oh my word, this is something a little bit special?
Well, we saw John first playing in the kitchen. We've seen him twanging around on the guitar with Paul in Mimi's porch, but basically they rehearsed in our kitchen because my mother was all for it, having taught John the banjo.
Sure she was.
And yeah, Rod Davis, when they're in the Quarrymen, says that whenever I went in, he said, where was your banjo? And I said, in my bedroom, in the back of the cupboard. And because I used to have to shut the cupboard when I was in bed because it looked really weird there at the back, you know, standing up at the back of the cupboard. So I'd make sure the cupboard door was shut. And he said, because every time I came in, your mother would take the banjo from me and join in and play, leaving me without the banjo. That's Rod Davis. So she was all willing and did the washboard with them and stuff like that. And so that was the first rehearsals that I saw were in the kitchen. Then we went to, when Liverpool celebrated its 750th anniversary of having been granted the charter by King John. We did 800 years last year, didn't we? They went to play in Rosebery Street on the back of a coal lorry. And just prior to that, my mother and I and my sister went to Garston Market, a famous market.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And we used to stand and watch people selling things. Literally, the soapbox, they'd stand up on a box and sell, no microphones or anything. They had the voice that would just tear all over the market, and they had runners who were running through, working the crowd, running through the crowd, and people were buying things when they didn't know they wanted them. They probably didn't. And my mother bought three American shirts, genuine, straight from the prairies. Speak Factory. And they wore them for this. It was one of John's favourite shirts. You see him in it. You can see him in those photographs in this Czech shirt, because it was like cowboy stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. And we went to see them from the Sunday school outing. We were taken straight into town because Rosebery Street had won a competition as the best decorated street for celebrating the 750 years. Oh. And it was given some money by the council to put on a do. And the do had the Beatles, only they were the... I don't know if they were... people are going to be phoning in now. There could have been Johnny and the Rainbows or...
How old would John have been then?
It was 1957.
Okay.
So John was 17.
Okay. Well, speaking to Julia Baird, it's Paul Jacobs on City Talk 105.9. Of course, we're right in the middle now of the first ever Beatles Day, but it's Beatles Week, really. It's been extended from a day to a week, and I'm excited because I'm in the city. I'm back in my hometown after being away for so many years, coinciding with the start City Talk 105.9, and of course their first ever Beatles Day, which is fantastic. Julia, I'm going to bounce around a bit because I hate going in chronological order because it really annoys me. People go, oh, we know what's going to happen next. When you go around the world today and people know who you are, what kind of... A feeling do they put out to you? What's the connection they have? Do they have this connection with you? Because I can see the look. There's an instant look between you and John. Straight away, no doubt about it. If I'd have come into a crowd room and I was looking to interview Julia Baird, I'd have known it was you straight away. What kind of things do they ask you? Peculiar things? Sweet things? Harsh things? Any nasty things? What's the sort of the whole gamut that comes your way?
Well, first of all, can I say that most people don't know anything about my relationship with John. Okay. That if they do, it's because I'm at a Beatle event or something. So I'm prepared. I go and I'm prepared. Now, as you said, if you came into a room and you were looking for me, there might be 20 people there, but you'd scan it and say, oh, it must be her. Yeah, because people have met me at airports and things, and there's no trouble in finding me. But if you didn't know that... if you weren't expecting anything to do with John and I was in a room, you wouldn't know unless I told you. And then you'd say, ah, I can see that. So most people don't know anything about it. But when they do, then maybe I'm up for interview like now, or people will chat to me and people will just stop me in the street if they know I'm there for a certain purpose, like in Beatle Week, and say, can we have a photograph? And I don't mind that at all, because I'm not John. I haven't got John's talent. I've never made a record. I can't sing.
But that's a joy to do that, to be asked, isn't it? Like that?
But
that's a big joy. Is that bring a smile to your face and think,
yeah,
this is the legacy continuing in a way?
But it's people wanting to get a bit closer to John. And I can understand that, you know. And I don't have to be there, do I?
Does it ever annoy you?
Only if... the questioning is rude. It's rare, but it does happen.
Sure.
Yeah, mainly Americans. Yeah, that they push them.
I'm surprised the Americans, because my sister lives in America. Yeah. Whenever I go there, where are you from, Paul? Oh, Liverpool. There's only one instant thing, one instant retort. It is, of course, the Beatles, and they love it.
Yeah.
And when I say my father going to the same school as John, that's it.
Yeah.
I'm away. Which for me is a point of proudness on my part. That's what I feel. Is that the same sort of thing with you? It's just total, unequivocal proudness.
Yeah. Absolutely. He's somebody that has changed the face of the 20th century and therefore the 21st century.
How hard is that for you to grasp?
Well, I think back to my mother and think, I so wish, obviously she was here for any number, every reason, but I so wish, because she had every faith in John. She knew his talent, and that's why she pushed him all the way, because she knew that this was special. And it was almost he was doing what she wasn't able to do, because she was a natural entertainer in her own right, and introduced him to everything. It was my mother that wanted Elvis records in the house and was playing Gene Vincent, Little Richard. It was my mother doing it, not John.
Because every mother believes in their son or their daughter, don't they? Yeah. It's a natural thing to have. But she totally, unbelievably, I mean, there was no one who was going to shift her from that view, was there at all?
No. And at one point, Colin Hanton was telling me, one of the drummer from the Quarrymen, that they went to a working men's club, and I'm not sure where it was, maybe Penny Lane. I can't think where he said, but maybe he can phone in and tell us. And my mother was one of two people in the audience and standing up and whistling and clapping and shouting afterwards, you know. And he said, I've put it in the book, your mother was so behind us, so proud of it all, and turned up.
Did you have her belief?
Well, we were younger. If John was 16, then I was 10. And we just grew up with this music going on in the house all the time, and instruments and made up instruments, because the drum at that time was a T chest bass.
I love it. Yeah.
And I can remember Colin coming up the pathway with this T chest bass, and they'd get a pole and the string and make it up in the kitchen.
Should we bounce around again?
Yeah.
Let's go to the height of the Beatles. Right. I mean, I love watching all the old films and the footage when they're in America, stuff in the cavern, everything. When they were right in the middle of that, at the height of their fame, what was it like for you?
Well, we didn't realise how famous they got, none of us in the family, because John actually didn't leave Liverpool till he was 23. You know, people say, oh, you know, you lost him so early. Well, we didn't. We lost him later than maybe you lost your brother going to university, because they were still based in Liverpool for a long time. And Brian made them go to London. The contracts were in London. The business was in London. Brian had already removed himself to London. But Julian was born here.
Was that something John needed to get out of Liverpool, do you think?
I think by the time he and Cynthia had had Julian and the big tour had stopped, their first priority was to find their own place. And it had to be London. Brian wasn't going to allow it to be in Liverpool. It had to be in London. So we had him for a long time. He slept on the floor one night after an Empire do, and we were just all lying around chatting. We didn't realise, I don't think, I'm speaking for myself here, that he was a super-duper star until the Royal Variety performance and the famous Rattle Your Jewellery stuff. And that's when Beatlemania was born. Yeah. And there's lots of claims to how that phrase came about, but I think it's generally agreed that it was a journalist that had actually been to see the Royal Variety performance in November 63, or was waiting outside, somebody there, and there's some dispute, was it the Sun, the Mirror, the whatever paper it was, coined the word Beatlemania. Now, okay, so they were famous, famous, famous then. Then we saw them on stage at Christmas. And then they went to America in the February.
Yes.
Well, have you heard the lost Beeb tapes?
No, I haven't, no.
I've got them all, and they are outrageous. Mm-hmm. And it's all the Saturday Club things that they were doing. Mm-hmm. Now, on Saturday Club, it was Brian Matthews. The boys would have a postcard. Oh, happy birthday, Mary, in Birmingham, and happy birthday to Karen's mum in Edinburgh. And the country was hooked into listening to them. They were getting more and more famous, but they carried this on for a long, long time. So they go to America. They thought the screaming fans, they thought it was the sound of the engines on the plane. I mean, we didn't know.
Oh,
nobody knew.
My word.
And when they got to the Plaza Hotel where they stayed, the first thing they did was get on the phone back to Brian Matthews live and read out the postcards and happy birthday, Meriel. And I've put it in my book because it was stunning. And they were shouting, come on, it's your turn. You come over here, come over here, come over here. And they were asking them what's going on. And Ringo said, they sent four limos. We could all fit in one, you know. And they were stunned themselves by what was going on, absolutely stunned. Well, so you say world famous. I don't think we in the UK realised what had happened.
Because we were closeted in a way, weren't we?
Yes, until it all happened over there and on the Ed Sullivan Show, which you can see down in Beatles Story. It's all sort of documented there beautifully for everyone to see. And I think that's when we realised. But throughout that tour, and then John said on that tour, and don't forget us, we'll be back in 10 days.
I love it. We're talking to Julia Baird here on City Talk 105.9, John Lennon's sister. And, of course, it's what was going to be a Beatles Day. It's a Beatles week, which I think is fab. I think we should have a Beatles month, actually. Mm-hmm. How did that fame, Julia, affect you?
Well, one thing at school, in Liverpool in those days, as you'll know yourself, if you had a brother, it wasn't, does he play an instrument? It's, what does he play? And does he sing? Because everybody who had a brother, that brother was in a group. It wasn't a band then, was it? A band had violins and cymbals and stuff. A group. And so my brother sang and played the guitar, played the banjo and played the guitar. The thing was that the other brothers sort of tailed off, like Colin Hanton, the drummer, he went off to be, I think, an apprentice electrician. You know, people got jobs and went to university. Rod Davis was an Oxbridge entrant, ended up doing the special year, the S year. They promoted him to head boy to keep him out of the group, and he went to Cambridge. You know, there's all, not many stayed behind at the end of the day. They did all over the country, the Rolling Stones and the Kinks. They were all on the rise and rise from the various cities around the country. But obviously, loads of them had tailed off to get on with their lives, or parents, in Rod's case and Colin Hanson's case, intervened and said, "You're not carrying on with this nonsense anymore."
Great nonsense.
Yeah, no, I said to Rod Davis, "Do you regret this?" And he says, "Well, no, but he can't, can he?"
No, because of course. Well, he can't go back.
He can't go back, right. So it was just that my brother ended up carrying on playing. So we had a notice board in school with what they were doing and when they were doing it. And I stayed on to do A-levels. And more than once, when one of us hadn't done the homework, I was asked, would I sidetrack the teacher with some little snippet or other? And, of course, they're only human. And we'd end up spending the whole double lesson talking. And then the second bell would go, and we'd, oh, thank Julia, God for that. We've got another night to do this essay in.
How fantastic. Now, you mentioned about your book. Tell us about the book.
Right. I wrote this. I retired, took early retirement in 2004. I keep saying 2 years ago. It's four now, isn't it? Where does the time go? I know. And I wrote the book, and it was published in whenever it was. 06. Yes. And, in fact, we're about to make a film of it.
Oh, now tell me about the film venture, because this sounds very exciting.
It is. It's a British film company who made Brideshead Revisited and Mrs. Brown. So I couldn't be more pleased than that. You know, a solid cultured film company that I can get hold of, you know, they're nearby. So I'm very pleased about that. We're only talking about it, but they've wanted to make the film since they read the book. Apparently, it was a lovely story, actually, for me. They'd wanted to make a film about John and his life, although I tell you, listeners, the book is about our mother. John is there because the book is about our mother. They wanted to make this story, and they just couldn't find the information. And they said, we didn't want to be making up yet another story, because this is what happens. And so they'd put the idea on hold. Now, I knew nothing about this. And then the scriptwriter was walking past Waterstones in London. It just so happens that one of the people who works in Waterstones is a floor manager, is the son of a friend of mine up in Cheshire. And he'd made a fantastic display of my book in Waterstone's window. Not one copy, all of them.
It's meant to be.
And this person is walking past the shop, almost keeled over when he saw not one, but about 100 copies of the book in the window. Rushed in, bought it, read it loads and loads of times, and they started looking for me.
Can I ask you a question? And you can actually say, oh, Paul, shut up, I don't know. In the perfect world, who would you like to see play your brother?
Well, first of all, I'd like Kate Blanchett to play my mother. If not Kate Blanchett, Juliette Binoche. Well, I don't know what the possibilities are of that. And you can see that the film is truly about my mother, because that's my first thought.
She was everything. She was the pivotal part of the family.
Without my mother, John, despite his genius, would not have, I am convinced, would never have been John Beetle. Okay. Let me put it that way. So who would play John?
It's an unfair question to ask you off the top of your head. And I suppose you must have thought about it before. Okay, what do you think about that? Would you like to see Julian?
Julian, he looks very, very young for his age. He really, really does.
Are you quite close to Julian?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. And what about you? Because you're going to be in it, aren't you?
I can't even think about it. As I said, I'm going to hate the film, and that bit I am definitely going to hate. I am.
But you've got to have some kind of an input into who plays you. How wonderful is that? I mean, I knew I had playing me, but who would you have playing you? Well, I'm not going to be in your film. No, you can't ask me. I'm interviewing you.
I can ask a question.
Well, I'd have to have someone who looks like me. So there's only one person that really
your
looks
brother.
Like me. It's either my brother or it'd be Jerry Seinfeld, one of the two.
Yes!
I know.
Yes!
So who's going to play you?
Oh, now you've got me on Friends. who's going to play me? I cannot, because it's as a child, isn't it? So any child with dark hair and dark eyes would fit that bill.
Okay.
But, I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know how they're going to do it. And do you know what? That is the first time I've ever given it a thought. I think about who's going to play my mother and who may play John, my mother, first. And if anybody saw the film Elizabeth the First, that totally skewed up British history, I don't think Francis Drake was mentioned.
No, as most historical films do. If you look down through the years and Bette Davis, the Virgin Queen,
it's
so wide of the mark, unbelievable.
But Kate Blanchett, that beautiful woman, and my mother was very, very beautiful, was standing on a boat or standing on the pier, a cliff, a bit sort of French lieutenant woman-y, sort of peering out, not at Francis Drake, because obviously the Americans don't realise he might have been around. But she had this red curly wig on, I would say. Maybe she'd done her own hair, and I thought, oh my goodness, that's my mother.
Really?
Yes.
I think, as well, Kate Blanchett has great charisma and presence, doesn't she?
She's
one of the
few. Actress.
Well, I was going to say one of the few. I'm a great, great fan of the great Kate Hepburn. I think we overuse the word great as far as actors and actresses, but she is one. Well, that's very interesting. We haven't got much time, and I'd love to speak to you for many more hours, and maybe you'll come back again. So I'm going to throw the ultimate question at you for my last question. And you will say, I cannot do this. I cannot answer this. So, Julia Baird, John Lennon's sister. No, Julia Baird, that's all I need to ask you. What's your favourite Beatles song?
Do you know, I would say Woman.
Mm-hmm.
And then this morning, I heard Michelle, and I love all those old, Norwegian wood.
Mm.
I love the feeling, the nostalgic feeling. You know when a record plunges you straight into a time.
Mm.
It was such a good time and such a happy time that I love those songs. But I think for words, for meaning, for the philosophy of it, and for the loveliness of John, it has to be Woman.